WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively about to lose control of everything that's going to happen here. We're at Coco's Pub. We're in Lauraville. Marcella's taking lunch orders. Liz is making crab cakes as big as my head back here. All of it is brought to you, and I've given so many tickets away. I hope somebody won. I get tickets here. We're Coco's in Lauraville. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I have the funky, floppy bucket hat that I'm going to put on right now, as well as our friends at Raskin Global with this is a really special mallet. I'm trying to steal Richard Scherer's gig when he had the mallet the show. Remember that?
Sure.
Square off, right? But this is a crab mallet. It's brought to you by Raskin Global. But this is a special crab mallet, as you can see. Mm-hmm. It has a beer bottle dispensary opener on the other side. I'm going to put this to action. August 3rd is our 25th anniversary. We'll be at Costas on the 3rd. We'll be at Drug City on the 4th. These are the kind of people that I would have out at Drug City and Costas, but I need a guest at Coco's today. And I've been trying to get Shining on for a little while. He's writing music. He's out on tour. He's at the Washington Post, but living in Baltimore. And then Rasig, within 2 minutes, I invite both of you, because we're in Rasig's neighborhood. You both said we can come by. I invited both of you at 3 o'clock. And I thought, maybe they know each other, you know?
We definitely know each other, not from, we haven't seen each other for a while.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I want to say the last time I saw you was at Bill Stetka's 60th.
That's a while back. Yeah, I did the headgear.
Don't say that to Bill. He might be.
I did the headgear for that. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I live right around the corner, Ness. So my wife and I just walked over here. You know, in 2 minutes, basically.
Right.
So, yeah.
Sweated like a pig.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I haven't been able to figure out who's on mic two and mic three yet, so I'm trying to figure. At some point, I'll figure this out. Rasig comes on like once a year and hangs out. You have always been a studio Zoomer in the Shining basement in Butcher's Hill with the rock and roll guitars on the wall, and somehow these conversations meander from Olympics to baseball history, and they wind up somewhere in this realm of college pop radio, jangly pop.
Yeah.
That stirred your soul at some point when the Mets brought it out of Minneapolis.
It still does.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
That's exactly right. I mean, and to be honest, I mean, that's still what I listen to. I love finding new stuff on, like, Sirius XMU. You know, it's like the new college radio. I still live for that moment when you hear a great banging new song, and you're like, oh my God, who is this? I need to know everything about this band. I still live for that moment. And I have a 16-year-old daughter who keeps me young. We've been to a million shows in the last year. We went to Boy Genius at Merriweather last month. You know, she's turned me on to some great stuff.
You're staying young with music.
Yeah.
I think I talked to you about this the last time because, like, it's harder for me because I don't share a space with young people in that way, right? And radio doesn't come to me in the way that maybe it did when we were younger. But I do find myself finding bands and artists I like and going deeper into their catalog in some way that becomes more meaningful to me.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, I mean, this has been going on every day of my life. I went to see Seal in May, and I love Seal. I loved his album 30 years ago. It's the 30th anniversary. I've loved everything he's ever done, but I haven't seen him tour. He played Pier 6 in like 1999 or something, and he's out on the road with the Buggles, with Trevor Horn from Yes, who did all ABC, who, you know, just and is Seal's guy. And I went to see him one night, and it's rocked my world to now, like, I had to go get 90 Seal songs, fill the full catalog.
Yeah.
He's done standards, and he's gone. And then I went to see Mike Peters from The Alarm up in New York, and he's a 3-time leukemia survivor. He saved more lives than anybody. He has this thing called Love, Hope, Strength, where they swab people that we knew about when Jen got cancer, which we sort of modeled a lot of There Goes My Hero after Love, Hope, Strength. And so Mike played up in New York, and he's had leukemia in the last year. He almost died last year. He came back to life. He's vibrant as hell, and he's out on stage rocking it again. And I went up, and I'm like, man, I went back and got his whole catalog.
Yeah.
And I have been listening to all of these B-sides, acoustic sessions, stuff that he's done since the band broke up 30 years ago.
And it's a total revelation, right? I mean, it's stuff on there that just blows your mind that you didn't know about.
Yeah.
And it's existed for all that time.
Yeah, and so I'm doing that not necessarily being being as young as you because of where you are with your kids, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, here's the perfect example. My 16-year-old daughter, Lucinda, she tells me, hey, can we go see this band at the 930 Club? This was back in, like, March, April. I'm like, yeah, of course. Who is it? She said, their name is Inhaler. And I'm like, okay, let's go.
It's Bono's kid.
So you just took the punchline from me. So I go and look them up, and it's Bono's kid.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, my God, this is where we are in life, man. Our rock heroes have kids who are my daughter's rock heroes.
And Bono's playing the Thunderdome in Las Vegas for $1,000 a throw without Larry Mullen Jr., you know.
I'll pass on that. But Inhaler was amazing. And, I mean, you know, I don't know to what extent Bono helps them or co-write. I don't think he does. I think it's all the son's band, but it pays to be Bono's kid in terms of the guitars he played. He kept bringing out one guitar after another, and each one was more expensive and more tricked out and amazing than the one before. I mean, we're talking vintage Les Pauls, all kinds
of... As long as he knows how to play it, though.
Oh,
right?
He did, yeah. Well, he was great. Yeah. It was a great show.
See, Rasik thought I was just going to talk sports.
No, I was going to ask Dave do you play also? Or?
Yeah, so I play keyboards and guitars. I write my own stuff, put out a couple of records, and I don't really have the kind of day job that permits like some sort of touring situation.
Right,
and I don't have a band, but I get in the studio and make stuff, and you know Andy Bopp. I mean,
of course.
He produced my records, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And played guitar, you know.
That's a neighborhood guy now.
Yeah, he lives right here. Yeah. So
the last time the Rasigs invited me and my wife out, and they don't do it often enough, they invited us out over to Hamden for a bluegrass night.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? So like, when we get invited out, it's music with Rasig.
I would totally do that.
Every Tuesday night at Peabody Brewery, on 30th Street in Fremont, there's a bluegrass jam. 30 or 40 musicians, man. You should just bring your acts
and play.
You know, like, and play with them, because it's so much fun. It's really
I like the sound of that.
There was a lot of picking going on the night we went.
Definitely.
It was a great night.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Huh. All right, man. I might run into you there.
Okay, good. We'll look for you.
Well, I bring sports guys together. We wind up sitting talking music.
I think it's so funny.
I'd much rather talk music.
No, we're going to get to baseball, and we'll get to all the BS, as we would say. So I put a very innocuous – because I'll get deeper into this with both of you, because, I mean, you're both lifers. I've known you 30 years. I've known him since I was 15 years old, right?
Right.
And working at the paper, we're all newspaper guys at heart, always will be forever, right? Mm. But the music part of my life at this point, I'll be 55 this year, music brings me such joy. It inspires me in ways. I said to my wife, Seal inspires me. Like, it's different than just jamming. When I go see Mike Peters, who's beaten cancer 3 times and is happy to be back on, it inspires me. Not that Adley Rutschman doesn't, or that Trey Mancini can't, or that any of that, where that is.
Sure.
But music has been something that's been good, better to me than sports has been lately, for sure, in regard to how you're treated and how it treats you and how you feel about it later in life. And so I put this status up about 2 months ago, 2.5, it was winter time, maybe March. And I just said, what's the greatest song I would read from my status,
okay,
but it was basically, what I was looking to do was, I just got my classic iPod back to travel with. Okay, I paid $191 bucks for a really nice iPod, still, but it was refurbished.
Yeah,
but, you know, I have it, and I wanted to get all 20,000 of my songs. I don't like music on my phone. This is my I work on this too much to be like productive like that. So I thought, like, there's got to be some songs out there, and I have all of these great people in my life that, even if you just bring a song up, like, when I think of a great song you have to have, I think of, like, I Love You More Today Than Yesterday, but not twice as much as tomorrow. Spiral Staircase, right? So I think, like, those kinds of one-off weird songs. You immediately hit my timeline with a song that had me going. He writes on the timeline, it's a tough thing, but I would go with Sarah, S-A-R-A, and you're a speller, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Not Sarah Smile.
Oh, that's what I was thinking, no.
I was thinking Sarah, and I'm like, oh, man, you know, a lot of people would probably go with Landslide, not Sarah, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah, Sarah.
And I'm thinking Sarah Fleetwood Mac, and I'm like, I swear to you, Shining, I swear to you, this is going to be the funniest thing ever to you, because I went into my basement, and my wife would tell you, our Our showers kind of tricked out with some fun lights in our bathroom that had, she bought this LED lighting that can turn the, so I have a beautiful Bose speaker, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife can't even hear me, and I cranked up Sarah live from Tusk Era live, yeah. Late 70s.
Yeah.
And it's, wait a minute, baby, yeah, stay
right.
with me a while.
Yeah, wow, that is
really
a great
good
song.
Song.
Myself.
That's
a good song.
Great
it's
song.
And I'm
choice.
Thinking to myself.
But that wasn't the choice.
Oh,
well,
that wasn't
no, no,
the
no.
choice.
You just killed my punchline. So for 3.5 months, I have been trying to, like, say, man, Shinin's a freaking genius, and that's such a great song, and he's right. And then Christine McVie died.
Yeah.
Right? And so
yeah.
I was listening to her contributions to the band, and I thought to myself, you know what I'm going to do today? Shinin's on a show. I'm going to go to my Pacifica belt buckle wall. I'm going to get out one of my belt buckles. And for you, I'm going to bring my Fleetwood Mac belt
oh
buckle,
my
right?
God.
So I got my Fleetwood Mac belt buckle here for you.
Bad.
And then I text him and I say, hey, pick another classic rock band, because I wanted to be a Wiseacre, maybe bring him a Peter Frampton belt, or, you know, maybe a Roger Daltrey belt. I don't know what you're
right.
into, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I know you're very alternative. And these belts were all made like 76 or 79, so maybe only the Police belt would fit you. I don't know. But or maybe the Cars, right? That's probably something you like. So I say to him this, and then he writes me back, Rasig, you broke my heart. He broke my heart 3 hours ago. He writes me
yeah.
back. I'm on my way to get peach cake, and he texts me back. He's like, I didn't mean the Fleetwood Mac song. I meant the Dylan song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Now, nice. Look, I mean, I will say, like, that kind of question, the greatest song of all time, you know,
oh.
like, if you said there's 7 days in a week, is that right? Or unless you're the Beatles and there's eight?
Right. Yes.
But, like, if you ask me on each of those 7 days, I'd give you a different answer. Like, that's the kind of question.
It's a
that
mood
is.
Question.
It is.
Yeah.
At that moment when I wrote on your was it Facebook?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where my head was. But it's Dylan, and I'll tell you why. Number one, I mean, Dylan is our greatest songwriter. I mean, I don't. If you ask 100 songwriters,
if you ask Petty or Springsteen,
yes,
they'd say Dylan.
They would say Dylan.
Right. Okay.
So. And Sarah, okay, even if you ask 100 people what's the best Dylan song, only one or two is going to answer Sarah, but it's the right answer. And the reason is, it is the most personal, heartfelt. Like, Dylan cloaked all his songs, all his lyrics in this mystical imagery and history and obscure. He was the king of obfuscation, you know. He never wanted you to know what was truly in his heart.
Symbolism.
Symbolism everywhere.
I learned that in 10th grade, Miss Monday.
But this song,
Catcher in the Rye.
This is the only Dylan song, the only
Grapes
Dylan song that you can see his life in every line. And it's so heartfelt. He named it after his first wife. I mean, it is the most heartfelt, deeply personal song Dylan ever wrote. And it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Number two? You got a song?
Well, my favorite is, and it's Dylan related, is The Weight by the band.
Right.
From Music from Big Pink.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I
it's
my
a great song.
My connect on it is that I used to be a coxie. They called me Wrong Way Rasig in college because I was a terrible coxie. But when I was a coxie and the crew team would get together at this little bar, they'd always blast The Weight and we'd all like chime in. So
great
sing-along. Resonates. It's a great.
The greatest great, bar sing-along.
One of the great bar sing-alongs.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah, without.
Yeah.
So my wife would put this classic rock channel on down at the house when we worked together, you know, 10 years ago. And songs would come on and be like, who's that? And it would always be the band. And I'm thinking to myself, I haven't listened to enough of the band. I mean, that would be something to your 16-year-old kid that instead of listening to whatever cool stuff she's lit, I would go back and, because I need to discover or rediscover that. I need to go back and rediscover some Humble Pie and some the stuff that you guys are, well, you're a little older.
I'm older.
You're
I'm 60s all the way. Like
yeah,
you.
You're a different era than me.
I am. I'm a different era than a lot
I'm
of.
I'm an 80s kid, you know. That was my wheelhouse, you know. I was 15 when Born in the USA and Purple Rain came out.
Right.
That was my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But did you not get wingsy or Zeppelin-y or Deep Purple-y and 70s?
Not until
did
later
you not
in
get
life.
Disco-y? Did you
no.
like? Oh, see, man, I went through all. I mean,
I got
everything
Prince-y.
In the 70s. This is the reason
Prince was my guy.
All these
this
new
is the reason.
Adverb
no,
coming
growing up,
with.
Up in the '70s, this is really the reason that I'm still cool and relevant. It's because black music, white music, country music, disco music. There was no rap at that point. There really wasn't metal. It kind of came on, but Van Halen was sort of in. Priest and Maiden was a gateway to that. And then in the early 80s, the College Rock came, the REMs, the Polices, the Run DMCs, the Beastie Boys, like all of that
yeah.
happened. But the basis for all of that in the 70s was like, my mother listened to Bobby Vinton and Engelbert Humperdinck, and I knew what Frank Sinatra was, but my cousin, who lived two blocks from her, Tyndale, right by you,
yeah.
My first album that I ever had was given to me on Tyndale Avenue. Two blocks from where you've lived the last 40 years,
right.
My cousin Nelson gave me his copy of Kiss Alive.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
1975,
awesome.
Six. He sent me home with it because it was scratched, and his parents got him a new one at Two Guys down the street. And
two
he got
guys,
a new
right.
one. And this was his gift to me. My cousin Nelson, he's lived in Venezuela for 30 years. He gave me Kiss Alive 1, and that was it. It was over after that. Like, that
yeah.
was it. Then I had to have Aerosmith Rocks. I had to have Ted Nugent, Cat Scratch Fever. Then I had to have every disco 45 there was.
Huh.
Saturday Night Fever, and it was over. Like, it was. Then after that, it was. That's where I am now. Thousands and thousands of concerts
huh.
later.
Yeah, we diverged there. So I was growing up in Georgia. So, yeah, my parents were ABBA, John Denver, all this stuff.
Wow.
I can still respect all that. I still hear it and get nostalgic. But where I veered, I grew up in Georgia, so I got classic rock, all, you know, country-ish, Hank Williams Jr., ZZ Top. And then Springsteen blew my mind and changed my life in the early 80s.
Springsteen was what changed you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, it's funny you'd say this because it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're giving these scratch-offs away. Mike Rossigliano is here. Dave Shinen from the Washington Post. We're at Coco's in the 45th. We had Senator Corey McCrann. I told you it was a lottery story with Bruce Springsteen. So the I want to say the only time I've ever hit the lottery in my life where I've actually cashed a ticket was I played a number on the Tunnel of Love tour. I couldn't get in up at the Spectrum, and I had never seen Bruce. It was 87, I guess, spring 87. And I went to East Point Liquors, and I boxed for a dollar. 9:30, I was working at the paper. I boxed for a dollar, and if I won, I won $80. And I said, if I win, if this number hits, I'm going to go to Philadelphia and see Bruce Springsteen with it. And I won. I won $80, and I went to Philadelphia, and I couldn't get in for under $150 at the time. It was crazy
that's
expensive.
That's lottery well spent.
Crazy.
Back then, that's a lot of money.
Crazy expensive. There were no tickets. Like, I'm in Philly. There were not even scalpers. There were just no tickets. It was the second, third show of the tour. He opened in
yeah.
Worcester. It was Tunnel of Love.
That's some Taylor Swift stuff right
and
there,
And this is
man.
After... right, but this was after the Live 85, 86 came in.
Yeah.
He's the biggest actor.
He was,
in the world.
Yeah,
he's the biggest actor in the world.
He was Taylor.
And he's in Philly, right? So, and everybody loves him in Philly and like all of that. And I was standing in front of the Spectrum. I walked around for 4 hours with the $80 in my pocket. I didn't sniff it. There was no ticket to buy, right? And a guy comes up to me. He says, hey, dude, you need a ticket? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I'm a man from Harrisburg. My girlfriend couldn't come tonight. It's just $40, man. It's on the roof, but... So I paid $40,
oh,
and I didn't even sit. It was in the top of the top of the Spectrum. That
yeah.
little strip where there were like five rows
yeah,
at the
yeah.
top of the Spectrum,
yeah.
you know? That's where the seat was, but I sat closer, and I heard She's the One that night to open the second act. And he played Seeds that night. He played Spare Parts. You know, Clarence came out to do All That Heaven Will Allow, and... Oh, man, he played Be True that night. Like,
oh, that's a great one.
Oh, he played
what
Be True.
What a pull
Rosenthal
that one is.
Rosenthal was so pissed that night because he missed the show,
song.
You know, because he loved Be True. So,
so good.
What is it with sports writers and Springsteen? Because that's really
yeah.
a thing, right? That's a big thing.
It is, you know, or at least it used to be a thing. I mean, you know, we're all kind of aging out of the business, or the business is
Bruce
aging
isn't.
Us out. No,
he's
but
still playing.
But like, you know, right, sports writers of my generation, Springsteen is the...
Dylan.
He's the Dylan. He's the yeah. He's
the Mickey Mantle.
He's what we all aspire to. You know. I mean, he is a better songwriter in 3 minutes. I mean, he tells a better story in 3 minutes than we do in 3,000 words. I mean, and as a songwriter myself, it's the gift of imagery and simplicity in the same package. So, writing beautiful, but writing concise, and he puts it all in a 3-minute song. And, I mean, some of the story songs that he's done, I mean, are just ridiculous.
And he's still writing great stuff. He really is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still doing great work.
Yeah. And it's funny now, the generation of sports writers younger than me, just by one generation, they're all into Jason Isbell more than Springsteen. And Isbell is the same type of songwriter. Story songs, imagery, but concise, beautiful, and packaged in a 3 to 4 minute rock
He's
song.
The Springsteen with Gooses to the Dead. Is that what you would say? Maybe.
Yeah.
Or Fishes
yeah,
to the Dead.
Yeah, and he's from Alabama, so it's different. It's not New Jersey. You know, you wouldn't want a Springsteen clone. It's not that. It's just that he does the same thing. He writes beautifully in a short, contained song. And it resonates with sports writers.
So when I ask him for a second best song, and there's no Springsteen belt buckle, I'll have you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't made then. I guess he wasn't popular enough. I don't know. Or maybe Landau didn't sell him off. I don't know. But, you know. But for you, with Thunder Road, you said Thunder Road.
Yeah, I would put that up
like,
there.
I would not argue
any
that
given
point.
Day of the week, yeah, I'd pull that one out.
But that's not my favorite Springsteen song,
no?
Right?
What is?
That's a day of the week.
Yeah,
I mean,
I love
Valentine's Day.
So
if I'm going deep tracks, I would go with Valentine's Day if I had to pick one. But I'm a She's the One guy, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which is all kind of a mood, that song. Like, it's not one of his stronger lyrics, I don't think.
She's the One, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more of a mood.
It's a
more
Bo Diddley
of a,
kind
yeah,
of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, and that one is so perfectly placed on that record, right? Doesn't it follow Thunder Road? And doesn't it bridge the gap between Thunder Road and like Jungle Land
Thunder
or
Road,
something?
Is it Night after that? And Jungle Land's at the end. Jungle Land's the last track. So we're thinking album, like playing it straight. I had this conversation with Tommy Conwell last week on the air playing something straight through.
Yeah.
That is, for people our age, whether it was Drop the Needle on an album, whether it was an 8-track, whether it was a cassette, you only listen in one order.
It needed to go top to bottom. Yeah.
Right, like Meatloaf's Bad Out of Hell is a Broadway production.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's a Broadway, it's meant for Broadway, right?
Yeah, no. And so when I throw the Alexa on, you know, to hear music, you don't get
it's
that at
trouble,
all. You never
yeah.
get that. It's trouble, exactly.
There's so many things in my life that with old songs, I hear the beginning of the next song when that song ends.
Yeah, yeah. You're anticipating it. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I can't hear the end of, like, Tom Sawyer without thinking Red Barchette is going to begin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just because that's the way it.
And you've internalized.
Not God meant for it, but Getty meant for it.
You've internalized that 3-second pause between them, too.
Right.
And you know exactly when
Take
it's coming in.
Take a sip of my beer and get a nacho.
And then it's coming
you know?
Right there, yeah.
So
yeah.
I wanted to say this, Dave. So when you mentioned before about, you know, the songwriting being like a concise thing.
Yeah.
And then contrasting that to your sports writing, which is, you know, sports cartooning, which is what I've done most of my career, is that too. You know, it's basically
it's a limited palette.
I mean,
small
talk about
story,
concise. Yeah,
you know, get the point across.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
I've done hours with him on this.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like on how to be. Tell him how you do a cartoon. Like what? First thing is you want to say something. You want to. You have a message when you start to draw, right?
I don't think it's probably any different than Dave. You know, writing a sports story. I just am trying to. You know, editorialize on it and maybe have some fun with it in a smaller package. Maybe, you know, my kind of cartoons were more multi-panel cartoons.
Right.
Just because I'm a Mad Magazine guy from, you know, way back when. So
this, then that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, but still, the idea of a punchline at the end, an impact at the end, you know, of the cartoon.
But I've seen him work, right? And I've seen you work, like, in a press box. But, you know, I mean, every sports writer, they're saying, you know, it's this, you stare at it. I've been at his place when he's been working as a craftsman, and you don't have notes for Sig, right? I mean, you don't even write a treatment.
A rough.
A rough cartoon, but not words.
Right, a rough.
You're not, like, writing in a paragraph, this is what I'm trying to say. It's all in your head. It's literally all in your head.
Right, but
it's not like a recipe
rough.
Where you would write everything that's going into this.
Well, you work with Tom Tolles, who, you know, is our good buddy.
But a rough to you is in images. A rough hey. DOS is in words.
It's words and right? images for my style of cartooning.
When I write, I write in indices, right? So, like, I say these are the 10 things I want to say, and then I can move them into the order.
Yeah.
Now, that comes from being a kid where I would have quotes that I would want to put into the story in the right place, right? I want to get the quote that has to do with that part of the story. I would write it that way as a game story writer, but if I'm writing to write a book, it's an outline.
Right,
and then
right.
you know, it's literally an outline, and then what am I trying to say in every act in the play?
I mean, book writing requires so much more discipline and organization, right? I mean, game stories, I mean, you're on deadline. You barely have time for any of organizing. You're trying to crank this thing in 20 minutes. And hey, it's daily journalism. If it sucks, you got another chance the next day, right?
But yours never sucked.
I mean, thank you, but you know they did. Sometimes they did, you know. But you know, I knew that like on Sundays I had to give them $1.50's worth. I couldn't just give them a quarter's worth, you know, because the Sunday paper's expensive.
Right.
So you know, I mean, I had my days, you know. That's a newspaper. You.
I get it.
A quarter, yeah.
I get it.
So yeah, I wanted to ask though.
I used to deliver the paper.
So. Did the words come last for you?
Not always. I mean, it depends. I guess it would depend on, you know, if I had a really strong idea, then I didn't need a lot of words.
Right.
And if
right.
I didn't have the strongest idea, maybe, you know, it would be a little
The words wordier. Were going to sell it more than the images.
Words more than the images. Yeah. Images to draw your eye to the paper, maybe, that type of thing.
That makes sense, yeah.
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 But I miss doing it. I mean, I haven't done it in quite a while. You know, like the sports cartooning field kind of faded out completely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
It doesn't exist.
Yeah. And we were in the
and those that do exist get thrown out, and they make up lies about what you do or don't do to show up. I mean, it's quite a gig after 27 years.
Just
be thrown out, and they're like,
I'm
"Well, we'll
saying,
let Luke in, but we're not going to let you."
I'm just saying, back in the day, way before, you know, when I was a kid, sports cartooning was a huge thing.
You but
know,
you didn't need access.
Every
to
paper
do
had one.
Every paper had one. Yeah. It was there's a great history.
But a lot
of
your cartooning came off of what sports writers would unearth in a locker room about what a player would say.
Oh.
Or do, like all of that, right?
Of course. In fact, you know, this is I'll throw this story in. So Ken Rosenthal's first day at the newspaper, at the News American, at the News American, he came in and he comes right over to me and he said, Eddie Murray put me up against the locker room, like he against the locker. I came into the locker room to interview on my first day. Eddie Murray threw him up against the locker and said, that sucker that like did that cartoon today about me, you know, what's the deal? And he didn't even know what was going on. You know, he came in and argued, you know, complained to me about it. I was like, that's why I like being a cartoonist, man. Like,
you don't have to show up the next day.
I don't have to deal with these guys.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Woo.
Yeah.
Dave knows. I know. We know.
Yeah, you guys know.
We know.
You know. I've never had to deal with that.
Well, here's what I want to do. I'll take a break. Dave Scheinert is here from the Washington Post. He's my friend. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. Mike Rosigliano's in the corner to the right here as well, our longtime friend and cartoonist. I'm celebrating 25 years on August 3rd over Costas on August 4th at Drug City. 25 years, 2 days in Dundalk. It's fine. People are coming by. If you have a Cito Sucks shirt or me in it,
yes.
I'd like to see it.
There you go.
It's time.
I put that on your website. I put that on Facebook today.
So what I'm trying to do with this anniversary is like, I'm looking for a picture of me in a Cito Sucks shirt, and I can't find one. I know one exists because I made them and I gave them out, like all that. So on the 3rd, I have nasty newsletters. I have every Dump Trumpy, Wacko for Flacco, defense signs, Clobber Cleveland, Spanky. I have all of those signs, some of them. I'm bringing them down. I have Get Nasty shirts. I have Nasty Nation. I have all this stuff that there's 5 of this and 10 of it. And I'm just going to put it down. And if you want to come have it, see it, play with it, take a picture, take it home, or give it to Goodwill. I don't even care at this point. But so next segment, though, I want to talk sports with you guys because it has come full circle here that over 31 years of me doing this and 25 years of having the station, that both teams believe they can win a championship.
Exactly.
And more than that, three really, like, you know, naysayers, because we've lived here, could believe that there might be a parade here in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years on one side or the other.
Well
so
said.
I want to debate that.
Or both.
Well said.
We're
at
Coco's.
Yeah.
We're in Lauraville. We're in Baltimore City. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. Leonard Raskin has given me the Raskin Global Crab Claw. I feel a little bit like Richard Scherr on Square Off. We're going to square off on sports here coming up next. And I got my Fleetwood Mac belt buckle. I'll put it back on. Don't worry about it. He didn't. I don't have a Dylan belt buckle.
No.
All right. There's no Dylan belt buckle.
All right. Well,
man.
I'll check eBay.
I'll get you something like that. Rock and roller. Dave Shinen here and Mike Resigliano.
Dave,
back for more.
I love the background for you with the musical stuff, man. That's awesome,
yeah.
Man. That's great.
How many Olympics have you covered?
Whew. Probably 5.
How many baseball games have you covered in your life?
Oh, my God.
1,500? 2,000?
2,000?
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's done things. Back for more. Yeah. We're going to do sports right after this at Coco's. We're on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's Baltimore Positive and WNST. Stay with us.